This is Cashing Out with your host, Dustin Sweetelson, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We are live in downtown Las Vegas at the Circa Resort and Casino. Welcome in to the VSiN studios here. I'm Doug Kazarian. Dustin back in the hot seat tomorrow, but for the next 3 hours, I will be steering the ship left and right. But we have a bunch of guests that are going to join us, and we're going to break down a ton of stuff. We are monitoring the one game that's remaining in major pro sports going on right now. That's Sunday Night Baseball. They are headed to the ninth. There was some drama, bases loaded, two out, but the Mariners get out of it. So they're hanging on to a 3-2 lead in Houston, and they're seeking their first series win on the road since the end of May, which is just remarkable when you factor in that they're still in the hunt in this American League West that really no one wants to take control of. But we'll continue to monitor that game, and I will have you updated, especially when we get to the bottom of the ninth. But Josh Hader out for Houston to hopefully keep this margin one run. Awesome guests coming up. Again, over the next 3 hours, we're going to talk baseball. We're going to talk NFL. Obviously, the season's coming up, and we're going to talk more college football. That's what we did last night. We're going to continue that. So who do we have on deck over the next few hours? Well, bottom of the hour, Mick Chiarella is going to join us from Fantrax. He's a senior analyst, and he's going to talk some Major League Baseball. It's never too early to look ahead to tomorrow. So we'll break down Monday's card. Also, the futures market, very compelling. I think the American League Cy Young Award is far from decided, even though the Yankees have their ace and Schlittler being odds on. But Dylan Cease pitched well today, even though he didn't have his best stuff. So I think that race is still tight, and some of the other races as well, although it certainly looks like that Yordan Alvarez is going to win the American League MVP for that race. But also, we have Nick Whalen, who's going to, you might know him from Prop Points. He does a bunch of other stuff. RotoWire senior analyst, going to talk some NFL futures as we embark on the regular season, maybe even get some opinion on some preseason games as we head to week two this week. And also Logan Windsor, also from the Midwest, great state of Wisconsin. He'll be joining us to break down Monday's card. He's very dives deep into the prop market. So kind of interesting on that front. And then Zach Bigelow, college football handicapper, going to join us in the final hour because we got the college football season starting even before the NFL regular season gets going. So a lot to get through, and we're going to recap the day that was in sports. Had a remarkable finish in the WNBA between Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever, and also Angel Reese and the Atlanta Dream. It's just poetic, some of this stuff. Reese misses a layup in the final seconds at the end of regulation that could have won the game, perhaps, for Atlanta. Instead, they go to OT, and Reese, the subject very much so of a lot of criticism with the missed layups and all that, but obviously it was contested, and it wasn't like a breakaway missed layup like she had earlier in the game. So we'll talk about the futures market. I only think there's three WNBA teams that can win it all. We'll talk about that at some point, but a lot to get through. We had some awesome guests last night that broke down their opinions for the upcoming season. We had some NFL win totals, so make sure you go check out the archives as well at VSiN.com. All this stuff's on demand. Also, however you get your podcasts, the Best Bets podcast also summarizes everything. So there are a lot of good stuff out there. In terms of the NFL, we had one sort of, and we have the leadoff double for the Mariners. So they do get the Hader down the left field line, fair ball. So we have a runner on and nobody out. So maybe an insurance run. We'll see if the Mariners want to bunt him over. It doesn't look like they're trying to bunt him over. Maybe just hit behind the runner and advance him to third base with one out. And obviously that brings in the sacrifice fly. So a lot to get through. Obviously a busy day on the diamond. We'll recap all that. But, you know, one storyline that I think is interesting is what the Raiders are going to do, because they've announced that Kirk Cousins, who really is, you know, an older version of Fernando Mendoza, all-American guy, very straight edge, good guy, and, you know, kind of similar traits in terms of a quarterback. So I think it makes sense that the Raiders went and got Cousins, and they're going to have him start, see how the season unfolds, and then maybe we'll see when, if and when Mendoza's ready in a month or so. But we did get to see Mendoza at home against the Arizona Cardinals in his preseason debut. After all, we have week one of the preseason just under our belts. And look, these guys are only getting limited action. Mendoza, though, here he is sort of just explaining what it felt like. The number one overall pick, you go through all the hoopla, the signing, the announcements on the dais, but now you get to play actual football against NFL opponents and just overall, what was his, takeaway?
It was great to get out there, get my feet wet. At first, especially the first drive, felt a little sped up because so much anticipation and excitement. However, I feel like my teammates around me protected me very well, and they helped slow me down. And I think it was a good experience.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair thing. I mean, he's very human, very transparent. He's such an all-American guy, and his teammates love him. That's the most important. Whether we're talking about LeBron, Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark, whoever it is that we think we know and we think we have an opinion about, pay attention to what their teammates say about him. And every teammate has just sung the praises of Mendoza, and he's going to work really hard. He's got the right coaching staff as opposed to last year, such a disaster under Pete Carroll and company. But I think he's saying all the right things, and it's totally – normal for him to be sped up, like he said. Like, he got sped up. And that's, look, I know he's now rich and won the Heisman and won a national championship, but it's still your NFL debut. You still have a lot of nerves. It's totally understandable. Now, what about the X's and O's, the execution? So that was the emotional sort of reaction. What about the X's and O's in terms of how Mendoza thought he fared?
It was great. The first series, I felt a little sped up. So it was good to come back on the sideline, learn from my mistakes. And then the second series, we were able to score. Third series, I missed a read there. And the fourth series, I thought we had a good thing going. And then, unfortunately, I missed a throw at the end. And then overall, I felt that the group that I was in with, they blocked fantastic. They had great routes. The run game was good. And unfortunately, I let my teammates down today. But it's a growing experience, and I feel like we're all growing, and it showed me that I need to grow a lot.
All right, so a little self-critical, which is what you want from these guys, to set the bar pretty high. Now, here he is. So obviously the bar is set high for him, but it's also set high for himself. And by the way, the Mariners get out of it, or they don't get any runs, though the Astros got out of it after the leadoff double. We're heading to the bottom of the ninth. Again, Mariners with a 3-2 lead as they go to the bottom half in Houston. Will keep you posted, obviously, as that game unfolds. So Mendoza's not going to start, but when is he going to play? He's the second betting favorite. And then you can also bet on his passing yards for the season and some other props. And I'm sure many of you are wondering, do you draft him at all in the fantasy drafts? Just because he could be a late season guy you stash away, maybe a backup with your main guy on a bye week. I would stay away from, first of all, betting him to win the offensive rookie of the year. He's the second shot at plus 470. If he's not playing week one, do you think his odds are going to go down or up? They're probably going to go higher because he's not top of mind. Maybe the odds makers will shade him a little bit, but there's no use to trying to pick off a good number. And also, this number historically has not been a quarterback award like the MVP is necessarily. So I'd be very reluctant to pick him, but I do wonder when the Raiders are going to go to him, because they have a couple sort of, there's tension, not that there's actual tension, but there's clashing of goals and friction there in terms of a team wants to win and be competitive this year. And if they are out of the gates and Cousins is playing well, because he's capable of playing well. So what if they win some games? What if they're 2-2 or something ridiculous like that, or 3-2 or 3-3? Are they going to go to Mendoza because he's the future, or are they going to actually focus on the present? I think as long as they stay competitive and have a shot, because the rookie coach wants to win. He knows the long-term goal, but he's got a buffer. Yes, there's been coaches who've been fired after one season, but he knows he's got some slack on the rope, at least to start. So I think we might not see Mendoza for a month and a half if the Raiders are playing well, Cousins doesn't get hurt. Now Mendoza's all of a sudden great in the practice, and then they have to give the ball to him. But I don't think he's wired that way. I don't think he's that amazing of a talent, like you have to play him right away. I think he's going to be a work in progress, a long-term project. Meaning like maybe the end of the season he's really good, not like 5 years from now, but I think he's gonna grow just studying and getting better if Cousins is playing well. So I don't think there's any rush to get him out there. That would be something I would be very confident in. So I wouldn't touch any of his futures in terms of the awards or the passing prop numbers, because he's just so unreliable what you're gonna get out of him. Now, Jackson Dart didn't get out there until middle of the season or early, first half of the season, I should say. But things didn't go well. They blew leads. Obviously, they got rid of Daboll after he replaced Russell Wilson, and then he played well. But this year, it's his team, new regime with the adult in the room with John Harbaugh, And here's Dart, the quarterback, after his first preseason action. Remember, he's a guy who tucks it and runs. Sometimes that makes fans and coaches nervous. Here's sort of how he discusses everything.
I really respect the rules and the thought behind, you know, the NFL has of keeping players healthy and reviewing things. But at the same time, I'm still puzzled by it just feeling like every time that I get hit, you know, I find my way in there, which I'm at times I still try to wrap my head around. But that's all that I'm going to say about that situation. You know, I'm really happy with how the drive ended.
All right, so what he was referencing is the blue tent and how he automatically has to go in. It's by a third party, an NFL-appointed official that sends him into the blue tent. It's not like himself or the coaching staff. Remember last year, Daboll went in the tent to kind of like check on him, and he claimed afterwards, oh, I was just checking on my quarterback. I wasn't trying to rush things or anything, but it was definitely suspect because there was so much pressure mounting given the situation. By the way, one out. The leadoff guy grounds out on a 3-1 pitch. Munoz is out there for the Mariners. Now, he was a roller coaster most of the season, but he's been pretty reliable of late. So one up, one down for Houston, and Seattle looking to take a series on the road for the first time since the end of May. In about 5 minutes, I'll tell you what that means for the American League West race. We're also going to talk about the entire Sunday in baseball. What did we learn today? Yankees lose a, you know, win a tough one that was a back-and-forth game. The Dodgers, all of a sudden, they're falling apart. The Mariners go and face the Brewers, who just took 3 of 4 in L.A. So a lot to get through. We're just getting warmed up. This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Houston Astros are down to their final out, but they do have a runner on first. It was a one-out walk. Munoz just got a strikeout, but now he's got to deal with, is it Alvarez at the dish? No, it's Trammell. So my apologies. The head was down, and they were kicking dirt in the batter's box to get the foot while they met on the mound. So we'll see if Houston sends anyone, puts the runner in motion, tries to get him in scoring position with a straight up steal, I should say. But right now, the Mariners lead 3-2, bottom nine. And Munoz out there for, you know, trying to shut things down. And obviously, this would be a big win for Seattle to kind of get this W as the AL West is just jam-packed. Right now, Houston leads the Rangers 2.5 games, and Seattle's 5 back. So picking up a full game would be huge with about 38 games to go, 37 games to go, if my math is correct. So a big day in the diamond with a couple things. Now, there's obviously a lot to dissect, but we're going to talk about some of the main games. The Dodgers lose again, 3 of 4 to Houston. They've been struggling. The offense is just a disaster. We have Tucker, former Astro, has been absolutely a wreck at home particularly. That's why he got the day off. He just cannot hit at Dodger Stadium. Now, it's relatively small sample sizes. This is his first year with L.A., but it's noticeable, and even Dave Roberts, the manager of the Dodgers, is talking about it. So this is not like it's some far-fetched thing that, you know, you're just connecting dots that don't need to be connected. But it certainly is worth mentioning. And the Mariners do hang on. They get the 3-2 win. It was 3-0 earlier in the game. Sorry, it was 2-0, then 2-1, 3-1, and then 3-2, and then it's been pretty much scoreless for the last few innings. So the Mariners do get the win. And what was a surprising performance for Brian Wu, who has been horrendous on the road away from Seattle. He's pitched great, pitched well today, and then pitched well at Yankee Stadium. So his last two road starts have been very, very effective. Going back to the Dodgers, so Wroblewski pitched yesterday. He's now on the IL. And then Skubal started today, was not that great, had a lot of pitches the first couple innings. And the Brewers had a lot of two-out hits, which is what they do. They're among the leaders in runs scored, but they are dead last at last check for me in terms of home runs. So they play a little small ball. They have a lot of speed on the bases, and the Dodgers' defense was wretched. Now, it's a 162-game season. When you go through that long of a season, you're going to have some ups and downs. But the Dodgers just don't look right. Even Ohtani, with the bases chucked and one out, hit a dribbler to second. I think he had a 1-0 count or something, and that just got out of the inning. That was late in the game, but the Dodgers' defense was bad. The first run was scored on an error. They gave it to Tommy Edman, but it was really on Mookie Betts. It was a grounder to short with a fast runner, Lara, running. So the play to second with two outs, and he flipped it, but it was like in the sun, and he flipped it too hard. But it's just they're kind of out of sync, and offensively they're just not there right now. A couple guys are hitting. Freddie Freeman's hitting for the most part, not the long ball, but he's gotten for average. Otani's still good, but guys like Betts and some of these others. And the bullpen is a question mark with Edwin Diaz, not exactly lights out in the ninth. So a lot to sort through for this Dodger team, but they lose 3 of 4. They've built a cushion, but they no longer have the best record in the National League. In fact, as I look at they have the third best right now. So they wouldn't even have a bye. If the playoffs started today, they would be a division winner, but the Brewers and Braves would have the bye. By the way, Matt Olson with a big homer when it was 2-2 in the late innings. Three-run jack as the Braves beat the Diamondbacks. That was quite the game out there in Atlanta. But the Brewers are making some noise, and just scanning, I think, yep, best record in all of baseball. Many thought they would go get Skubal, but they didn't. And they made some moves to help some of their bats, and they had some minor league stuff, but they're going to be interesting because they got the pitching. Henderson was fantastic today, and I'm really curious how this all plays out because the Dodgers, obviously the two-time champs, but they're showing signs of weakness. I wouldn't say they're coming apart at the seams. They're not exactly looking that great. I thought the Yankees, it was an impressive win. Now, Ben Rice had an error in the ninth that allowed the Blue Jays to tie it, but he had a two-run shot in the top of the 10th, you know, with the ghost runner, so at least he made up for it, and you could tell he was speeding around the bases at a very stern look, so he was not happy with the air on the leadoff batter of the ninth inning, as it looked like it'd be a pretty impressive win with Dylan Cease going for the Jays, and they got to Cease a little bit, but the Yankees hang on 4-3. The total was 6.5. I played under 7.5 on the overnight line, and it moved down. Now, David, you know, Weathers has been great. I was betting against him early in the season, but I've been impressed with his outings the last few weeks, and he was fantastic. Now, Cease was eating a lot of, you know, pitches, but I thought Weathers was the better pitcher today. So what did that mean for the AL Cy Young Award race? It's tightening a little bit. We still have Cam Schlittler, who pitched yesterday and pitched effectively for New York, at a minus $1.60. Cease is plus +130. Again, they each have, like, maybe five starts left in the season, and then a huge drop down to Rasmussen, or Sonny Gray, depending on your book. So you saw the big drop-off in that regard. But this is a two-horse race. I think it's far from over. I agree that Schlittler should be in the lead. And I don't think it's just a media market thing, New York and Toronto. I think he's been the better pitcher. Cease, I wouldn't count wins. Obviously, the offense has been putrid, but so has the Yankees' offense since Judge got hurt. But I think it's a really remarkable race. I would just make the odds a lot tighter. And all these awards races, there's a lot of speculation, right? We don't really know how these voters are thinking unless there's a straw poll, and ESPN does one for the NBA MVP. But for all these other awards, you can hear some comments from voters and some shows like Baseball Tonight at ESPN or MLB Network, and maybe some interviews here on VSiN. But you don't really know how the masses are processing. So it's a guessing game for the odds makers as much as it is for the bettors. So that's why there might be value. But I'm not going to try to scrape a few cents on an awards market that could swing with one, you know, bad inning, let alone bad start. So that's something to keep in mind as you look at any awards market, but particularly something like that, which is a two-horse race. Other games, I think the Padres are playing really good ball. So obviously they're probably not going to catch the Dodgers. They're 7 games back, but they are right now a wild card team. They're tied for the second wild card with Philly, which had a monster comeback today. So the Cubs are 5 games clear, even though they got blown out today by their rival Cardinals. By the way, Cubs open up a series with the White Sox tomorrow. Both teams headed to the postseason. Southsiders lead their division. Cubs obviously in the mix and right on the Brewers' tails, but they're leading the wild card. And then you have Arizona, a game out of San Diego, and then Miami, 3 games out. St. Louis lurking as well, 3.5. So the NL wild card, super interesting. That's why many wondered if some of these teams would be buyers or sellers. We didn't know about Mason Miller and the Padres. Now, all of a sudden, they're in the mix. But they had a big win today against Cleveland. Casey Mize, who they acquired at the deadline, did not pitch well in his first game. But he did bounce back and pitched really well today in Cleveland. The bullpen held things down. They got some late runs as well. 5-0 winners in Cleveland against the Guardians. Now, that AL Central that the Guardians play in is really sort of a tough puzzle to figure out. The White Sox go into Detroit. This was an opportunity for the Tigers to make up some ground, hosting Chicago, which typically is only good at home and okay on the road. How about the White Sox sweeping the Tigers in Detroit? Really impressive. So now, Detroit in second place, 5.5 games back. Chicago lengthened their lead there. Cleveland and Minnesota each 6 games back. So you see the division odds. And again, only a half game separates the Tigers and Twins, but you see the odds are 6-1 and 10-1. Not really sure why in that regard, but there you go. It's obviously, strength of schedule remaining, but it's baseball, right? So I would think 10-1 is a little aggressive, although the Tigers have a better, at least, core, even though they traded Skubal and Casey Mize. But the White Sox just are not going away. They're -250 favorites right now. And you have to think this team's for real. The offense is relentless. Vargas went yard for some insurance. He's a guy you cannot pitch around in that. He will put his bat on the ball and make some noise. And I think they're here to stay. Obviously, Detroit's pitching got worse, trading away Skubal and Mize. Yeah, they're fun to bet on. And, maybe Dingler broke through. He finally had some big hits after, I think he was in an 0-for-27 slump, which is not good. And he was an all-star this year. He was great for most of the season, but maybe he's back on track. But I don't know. I don't think the White Sox are going to lose this. That sends a message. Going into Detroit and lengthening your league with a sweep at 5.5 games. So pretty well done. Cleveland didn't do much in order to kind of, hold ground. They're still 6 back, like I said, alongside the Twins. Other games, and we'll get into all this over a little bit, but I think those are the biggest games that kind of resonated with me. The AL West is still a mess. Texas had a comeback win last night at the Athletics, but they didn't follow it up today. They lost 5-2, so they've been pathetic. And I think it's the Astros who are going to prevail, but Seattle, showed us something. We just keep waiting on Seattle to emerge and channel what they had last year that had them up 2-0 in the American League Championship Series, but they didn't get there. We're going to pivot and talk some football. Obviously, week 0 of college football is almost here, and with the NFL regular season right behind it, now's the time to get your edge with VSiN Pro. Join VSiN Pro today and get instant access to both our college football and NFL betting guides packed with team previews, power ratings, proven betting systems, and best bets from VSiN's top analysts. And that's just the start. You'll also get daily best bets from VSiN hosts and guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop tools and matchup analysis, plus 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. Start today for just $9.99 or save 50% with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Sign up now at vsin.com/subscribe. That's vsin.com/subscribe. All right, as promised, we're going to talk some Major League Baseball, look at tomorrow's card. There's a lot to get through. It's early. Sunday's card just wrapped up. But we want to get some early prices, maybe beat the market on some numbers. We have a guest from Fantrax joining us straight ahead. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, we're taking a collective breath. Finally, the day in sports, at least major pro sports that we monitor here in the States, just finished. The Mariners hang on 3-2. Munoz gets the final out with a runner on in Houston. So the Astros rallied a little bit, started out down 2-0. Hunter Brown did not have his best stuff, but they hung around, but the Mariners get the W. So take a collective breath. I'm also going to talk some WNBA in a little bit. And there's only 3 teams in my eyes that can win the WNBA championship. Only 3, even though about 5 or 6 based on the odds. And I still think Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever have some juice, some impressive win today on the road. But I think there's some value in the market on them to win the title. We'll talk about that down the road. But I want to pivot right now to Monday's baseball card after Sunday just wrapped up. And for more, let's bring in Mick Chiarella of the Fantrax senior analyst, does an awesome job for them as he joins us via the Progressive guest line. Mick, we appreciate you taking the time and being already ready to rock for Monday's card with Sunday having just wrapped up handful of minutes ago.
Listen, the grind never stops. Thanks for having me, Doug. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, you said it. The grind never stops. And as you very well know, just want to remind our audience, obviously there's peaks and valley to a season. Some of the best teams, like the Cubs, have had double-digit wins and losses in terms of streaks. Dodgers in a funk right now. I don't think they're going to blow the division, but it's worth mentioning it's down to 7 games. They are the third best record in the National League. So if the playoffs started today, they would not have a bye, even though they would be a division champ. They got some other issues. Wroblewski's headed to the IL. We still don't know what's going to happen with Glasnow and some of these other guys. And Otani's not pitching anymore. The lineup has been shaky, to say the least. They just lose 3 of 4 at home to the Brewers, and that's after getting swept by the Red Sox, getting swept by the Cubs. What do you make of them as they head to Coors Field? Usually a slump buster, but quote-unquote Colorado's aces in Sagano's on the bump, and this team's been can hit, and they've actually done okay against the Dodgers in recent games.
I think this is an opportunity for the Dodgers to get out of their funk to some extent. You mentioned Sagano has been their ace. That's a very loose term. You know, he's a decent enough ERA, but the underlying metrics are pretty abysmal. There have been 159 pitchers who have allowed at least 200 batted ball events. Sagano has the highest expected slugging percentage against, the second highest expected batting average against, and the second highest expected ERA against. So I think this is a get-right spot for the Dodgers, especially offensively. And then you look on the other side, they have Blake Snell on the bump. You know, Snell has always not been the picture of productivity as far as his health is concerned. But when he's been on the mound, he's been solid. He struck out 10 in his first start back from injury last week. You know, in the 13 career starts with the Dodgers, he has a 2.69 ERA, nearly a 30% strikeout rate. You mentioned the Rockies' offensive prowess over the last few games, which is warranted. But, you know, that was a lot against the Giants. I think this is a different beast against Snell and company. And with Hunter Goodman kind of questionable, he's been out the last three games. Kyle Karros on the IL. Their right-handed bats, just I don't see them having much success against Snell. So I'm going to take the Dodgers with the run line. I got it at minus 154 earlier in the day. You might even have to lay 2.5 depending on the book. You know, obviously this line is fixed, if figured to move overnight, but either way, I think the Dodgers win this game going away.
All right, so yeah, DraftKings and FanDuel, they are $1.63, $1.64 out there. Maybe much better markets in the prediction markets or some of those other markets like NoVig and stuff like that. So you believe in this Dodgers team to kind of get right, use this Rockies thin air out there at Coors Field, and also the Rockies pitching. I know what you're saying about Sagan. A lot of guys are just waiting for everything to unravel. A lot of balls in play. He's been very fortunate, but he's kind of one of those guys like a junk pitcher a little bit that kind of just weasels his way and gets guys off balance. So maybe getting him off balance, it's not part of the analytics per se, but I wouldn't be betting Colorado. Let me put it that way. I'm not on the Rockies, so I'll put it that way. And obviously being the road team and Coors Field expected high scoring game, but Blake Snell was great. You're right. One earned allowed in 8 innings of work against the Royals at home last week. We'll see how he fares at Coors Field and the headache that is having to pitch in that altitude. Another team you want to back. Now this one had a comeback win. Phillies were down, got a homer from trying to think who hit the homer. They had a 3-run shot to get back in it. And so the Phillies now kind of a little bounce in your step, or does that not factor into your handicapping much when a team has a comeback win, springboarding it into the next situation as they host the Marlins? And Miami's been pretty solid at times this year. And, you know, Philly's trying to get back in the mix. They're minus 1.5 on the run line. What part of the Phillies comeback today factors into your handicap for tomorrow's matchup?
I think it's a feel-good moment for sure, but I, you know, more look at this as how the Phillies have been playing collectively over the past few weeks. You know, they had a little stretch earlier in the week where their bats were quiet, but overall in August, they've been outstanding. They've scored at least 4 runs in 15 out of 17 games, and I don't think that's going to change against the Marlins and Jansen Junk. Pardon the pun, but Junk is not a pitcher who's going to induce many swings and misses. There have been 139 pitchers this year with 80 innings or more. Junk has the third lowest swing strike percentage. And the two pitchers below him in that metric are Javier Assad and Miles Michaelis, who have both been optioned to the minor leagues over the last week. So we're not talking about a pitcher who generates many whiffs. His swinging strike rate has actually been even worse lately. He has a 2.4 swinging strike rate over his last 3 starts. He has induced 5 total whiffs in his last 3 starts. For reference, Louis Varland got a 3-out save against the Yankees on Saturday and generated 6 whiffs in 3 batters, and Junk has generated 5 whiffs in 3 starts. So I don't think he's going to be much of a match for the Phillies. And on the other side, you know, the Phillies have their ace going to Christopher Sanchez. He's been one of the best pitchers in baseball for the last couple of years. He's tied for the major league lead in 15 wins. He's fourth in the NL in ERA and third in strikeouts. And even he's had great success historically against the Marlins. Marlins bats are combined 9-for-53 against Sanchez in their careers collectively. And even the bullpens, I don't think this is going to come down to the bullpens, but I think it's worth noting that Miami has two relievers who have pitched on back-to-back days. So outside of Fairbanks and Fauché, there's not a whole lot there in the Marlins bullpen. I don't think it's going to come to that, but, you know, in worst case scenario, I think that's a nice little tiebreaker. But I think with all these factors going into it, I think the Phillies win this game pretty easily.
All right. And Sanchez's splits at home versus away are worth mentioning. This year at home, 1.41 ERA, truly remarkable. And then on the road, over four, which is surprising. And obviously, this game in Philly. And Alec Bohm went yard. I forgot. I wasn't sure if it was Stott or Bohm. So he went yard with a three-run shot that really sparked it. Because they were down 5-0, and that brought them from 5-1 to 5-4, got them back in the game in the sixth. And then in the eighth inning, they tied it and took the lead. So big comeback for the Phillies, who are on a little bit of a roll. They're nine games above 500. I'm going to join you on the Phillies. You know, run lines can bite you. It's definitely, quote-unquote, the square approach. But every game is different. Obviously, when you have Sanchez, I usually do the run line in the first five because it isolates the starting pitching, and it's minus a half. It's not minus 1.5. Now, the betting market and books are starting to shift a little bit and sort of skew the odds, understanding that you get all of that starting pitcher for the first five, and whereas the bullpen comes in. So I think they give you pay a little bit of a tax, and how you evaluate the starting pitching matchup is part of the equation. So, you know, you might, and I don't see any first five lines, but maybe it's going to be like 20 cents higher, but I think it's worth it because, A, you don't have to give up the top of the ninth, the catcher deference, all that nonsense. When the home team doesn't bat in the ninth for the 1.5, you get the first five and five, and they're both playing hard, and there are no catcher's indifference and all that nonsense. So I typically do that, but you have to pay a little extra typically when you have a certifiable ace on the mound like we do with Sanchez. I mentioned earlier, Matt Olson went yard with a late three-run jack and broke a 2-2 game, gave the Braves the 5-2 lead and ultimately the win. You like his prop for tomorrow.
I do. He's going against Bailey Ober, who has struggled since returning from injury. He's allowed 17 runs in 27 and a third over his last five starts. Olson is 2-for-2 against him in his career with a double. And so I'm taking Olson to record at least two total hits, runs, and RBI in this matchup. I think the top of the Braves lineup is going to generate some offense in this one. And in addition to Olson's success in limited action against Ober, he profiles extremely well against his pitch mix. Ober features a changeup, four-seam fastball, and slider to left-handed batters. When Olson has faced those offerings against righties, he has nearly a 700 slugging percentage and over 1,000 OPS. So I think there's a lot to like on the Braves side, particularly with Olson. So I think total bases is viable as well, but it's only about a 10% difference in implied odds. So I'm going to take him to go over to record at least two hits, runs, and RBI in this game.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, he already has seven dingers this month, and it's only August 16th, so about one every other game. In a lot of ways, and I've been impressed with Olson. He had nine homers in July, so he's certainly been heating up. You have some other plays I want to pick your brain about. I also want to pick your brain about some plays I have. So we asked you, Mick, to stick around, and we're going to roll along here on Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. More of Monday's baseball card breaking down straight ahead.
Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Wrapping up the first hour here of Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Doug Kazarian here live in downtown Las Vegas at the Circa Resort and Casino. Sunday Night Baseball, if you're tuning in late, the Mariners hang on the road in Houston against the Astros. 3-2, your final, the division leading Houston Astros, that is. So that AL West continues to stay a mess as the Rangers also lose in Oakland or West Sacramento against the Athletics. That division's coming down to the wire. We also have football to discuss. Top of the hour, Nick Whalen of Prop Points. You hear him Monday through Friday. He's a co-host. He's going to break down. He has some win totals for teams in terms of their win totals. Also has player props. You can bet on passing yards, rushing yards for the entire season, and some conventional futures like teams to win it all, like the Super Bowl, things like that. So he will join us in about 14 minutes. I'm looking forward to catching up with Nick. By the way, football season is almost here, and the sharp money is already moving. Here's how the sharp plays sees it first. Exclusive data feeds from four major sports books. Thousands of sharp bettors and professional syndicates tracked in real time before the market moves. All of it filtered and sorted by version 6.0 of their AI model. That's the machine, now the receipts. Every play logged, every result public, records back to 2011, live logs since 2021. It all feeds a live performance terminal. Check it out anytime. No login, no paywall. Nobody else in the industry runs one because most records couldn't survive it. The Sharp Plays record gets audited daily by their own haters. No steam chasing, no stale trends, no recycled plays. Follow the Sharp Money at sharpplays.com. Speaking of trends, I heard this from Paul Howard from Follow the Money Monday through Friday. He texted me, 14 straight unders in the WNBA. Begs the question, has the market already corrected or do we have opportunity tomorrow? I like a side tomorrow a lot in the W. We'll get into that in about 20 minutes or so, 25 minutes or so. But I want to talk more baseball for Monday's card. And then I want to ask Mick Chilella from Fantrax, going to rejoin us now via the Progressive guest line. Mick, you had some interesting angles for the Dodgers and the Phillies on the run line, also Matt Olson. But how about some futures? You like a couple guys to be the RBI leader. These are great markets. I mentioned Matt Olson is gaining some steam in the home run leader market with seven dingers already in this month through 16 days of August. But you like the RBI market. Feed the people.
Yeah, there's a couple of interesting things here. I mean, I like a couple of Cardinals hitters, specifically Alec Burleson and Jordan Walker. Admittedly, this price probably was better 24 hours ago before both players accumulated four RBI each on Sunday against the Cubs. Having said that, I still think there is some value here. Burleson now has 90 RBI on the season. Walker has 88. CJ Abrams and Sal Stewart lead the league with 91. Yordan Alvarez has 88. Nobody else has over 82. So those five hitters are in a little bit of a cluster. And while we're in the analytics age of your top hitters hitting towards the top of the lineup, that's great for real baseball, but it does limit the opportunities to drive in runs for players like Stewart and Alvarez, who bat second. Abrams, who has been batting leadoff in the absence of James Wood against right-handed pitchers. But meanwhile, Burleson and Walker are hitting third and fourth consistently in a Cardinals lineup that has some juice at the top with J.J. Weatherholt and Ivan Herrera. So I think there's going to be a lot more opportunities to drive in runs for both Cardinals hitters. And one thing I really like about this prop, in addition to that, is that only 15 of St. Louis's last 38 games are going to be played at Busch Stadium. I think that's significant because both players prefer the road, which makes sense because Busch Stadium is a pitcher's park. It's top five in lowest park factor for hitters. And Walker has 58 RBI on the road compared to only 30 at home. Burleson's a little less extreme. He has 48 RBI on the road and 42 at home. But the Cardinals 23 road games is going to factor into this, especially as early as this week when they play five games in Cincinnati at Great American Ballpark. If either of those guys goes off, they're going to come down a bit. And St. Louis also has a very favorable September schedule, which includes three games in Coors Field, six games against the Giants, three games against Washington. So I think this price is going to continue to come down. And I think there's a very good chance that one of these players leads the league in RBI when all is said and done.
All right, so well presented. I agree with Burleson in that regard. He's the scariest batter for me when I have a wager against the Cardinals. He can rake, and then Walker's not far behind. So right now, just a recap. Abrams and Stewart, Sal Stewart of Cincinnati, CJ Abrams of Washington, they are tied for the major league lead at 91, and that's important. It's the major league lead. It's not just the NL. So they're at 91, and then Burleson's at 90, Yordan Alvarez at 88, and Jordan Walker also at 88. So they're right there. Then there's a drop-off to Dingler, who's been in that huge slump. Alonzo did go yard recently, but he's considerably back at 80. So I think it's, you know, essentially a five-horse race, and you like two of those guys, but it's a fun market for sure. It's kind of like a golf tournament where you bet on one guy, but you're also rooting against others. So you got action on every Absolutely. Shot when you do a golf. Even if it's a future, like an outright, and not just a matchup, you're really sweating out other guys. And that's the case here with the RBI market. So that's pretty fun in that regard. So I can get behind that. I may have to take a piece of one of those. Other futures, anything jump out to you? I know you want to get ahead of one market and enlighten the people here on that one.
Sure. So this line usually doesn't come out to the last week of the month prior, but I am all in on the Seattle Mariners to lead the major leagues in September victories. Looking at this prop, most teams in the league will have 24 games played in September. There are a couple who have 25, one or two who have 22 or 23, but by and large, most teams are playing 24 games. Seattle is included in that group, but they have an incredibly favorable schedule down the stretch. They start the month with two games in Boston, but after that, they play 17 games combined against the Angels, Athletics, and Rockies. Obviously, that's significant because those are the three teams with the worst records in baseball. So they're playing the Angels seven times, the Athletics seven times, and the Rockies three times. That's 17 out of 24 games against the three worst teams in the league. And even their other seven games, you know, two against Boston, two against Houston, three against Texas, it's not exactly a list of world beaters. They're all kind of in that mix for the wild card. So I think it's very feasible that Seattle can win every series, more or less, for the entire month of September. And especially if they could put the hammer down on those lesser teams like the Angels and Athletics, we could be looking at a run that maybe even gets them a shot at the division title or a wild card. I think their schedule is that favorable where I think they are a very good bet to lead the month in wins.
Okay. All right. We have a couple minutes to go. I'm going to ask you about my favorite play tomorrow, I think. I haven't done the full research, but I'm pretty sure it's the over 8 with the Tigers and Pirates in Pittsburgh. Now, Detroit just got swept at home, so maybe a little flat and demoralized that big series against the White Sox. But Framber Valdez on the bump for Detroit. Now, he's just been shaky all over the place this year. But more so, Carmen Mlodzinski, who has just been getting touched up of late. I like this Pirates lineup. They were sort of packing it in, but they've shown some life lately in this Red Sox series. So I like them to have some offense against Valdez, and I think this Detroit lineup can mash against Mlodzinski. 8 feels pretty low, all things considered, in Pittsburgh. How do you see it?
Yeah, and 8's always a good number to go over because obviously, you know, you hit 4-4 and it's an automatic win. So I think that makes a lot of sense from that standpoint. And as you mentioned, the pitching matchup, both pitchers have been subpar. Valdez, you know, he has the name value, but if you look at the underlying metrics, he has not been very good. You mentioned the Pittsburgh lineup. Just, you know, for the most of the season, they were mashing righties. But as you mentioned, they showed some life against Boston. They've been hitting lefties pretty well. So I think there's a very good opportunity for Pittsburgh to generate some runs. And as you mentioned, the same thing on the Detroit side. Mlodzinski has not been very good. Detroit has kind of been up and down. You know, Riley Green is on the IL. You mentioned Dingler has struggled a little bit. But for the most part, they've been a solid offense. You know, neither bullpen scares me. So I think this is a very viable over.
Yeah, and I'm typically an under better. I typically am. I like unders. I love all these unders lately with all the pitching and everything. But I'm definitely on that over. Maybe we'll have some others. Encourage everyone to go check out the VSiN.com for the VSiN Pro Picks page. But Mick, really appreciate the analysis. It was fun to chop it up and really good insight in some of these futures markets and also the run lines tomorrow. So we appreciate the insight.
Absolutely. Anytime. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. That's Mick Chiarella from Fantrax. He's a senior analyst who joined us via the Progressive Guest Line. You can check him out on Twitter at TheMick23. So really good stuff. And standing by, who's also going to join us via the Progressive Guest Line, is Nick Whalen. You hear him during the week on Prop Points. He's over at RotoWire, senior analyst there. He's all in on the Detroit Lions. We're talking win total, number one seed, Dan Campbell, coach of the year at 25-1. I'm going to give him a little pushback. I'm not betting the under, don't get me wrong. But I have some concerns about the Lions, despite just the basic, the regular ones of the tough division, whatnot. I'll explain that. He is just minutes away here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.